You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode number 19 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by the band Black Cat Manor. Black Cat Manor is a hardcore punk band from Freeport, Illinois. Black Cat Manor's music includes a perfect blend of blistering riffs, melodic breaks, and socially conscious lyrics that has the potential to appeal to fans of Slayer and Green Day equally. Last year, their song Hellfire was featured on the season premiere of the hit FX TV show American Horror Story Cult. For more information on the band, please check out blackcatmanorband.com, facebook.com/blackcatmanorband, on Instagram @blackcat_manor, and make sure to check them out on iTunes, Amazon, and all of the other streaming platforms. Now here it is, their song, Hellfire.
Welcome to the party, pal!
Tour Podcast.
Run for the road, cause it's gone.
Hey, what's going on? This is Chris Swinney, your host for That One Time on Tour. This is it. It's episode number 19. Episode 19 coming straight at you out of Muncie, Indiana. It is about 12:30 in the a.m. I got my son asleep a while back, and I am in my podcast studio, which is also my catch-all room. And I'm going to bring this to you. I have a really cool guest this week. Before I tell you about my guest this week, I do need to tell you about some amazing sponsors that helped me out. The first sponsor that I want to talk about is Muncie Music Center. Muncie Music Center is a really cool store here in Muncie, Indiana. They sell everything, guitars, basses, trombones, saxophones, keyboards, whatever you want. I teach guitar, ukulele, bass, banjo, mandolin. I teach everything there. So if you need lessons, hit me up. But if you need anything else, go to MuncieMusic.com. And if you're in town, if you're in Muncie, Indiana, for some reason, you want to hit them up at 600 South Mulberry Street in downtown Muncie, Indiana. So check them out. They've got a recording studio. It's a great place. MuncieMusic.com. Also, I need to tell you about Rockabilia.com. They've been a sponsor now for the last 4 or 5 episodes. They're wonderful. They sent me some really cool shirts. I got a really cool, like, Kill 'Em All Metallica shirt, tour shirt, from back in 1983. Of course, it's a reprint. It's not original. It'd be a lot more money if it was an original. I got a Propagandhi shirt. I got a Descendant shirt. I got all kinds of really cool stuff from them. They're an amazing sponsor. They have over 500,000 unique items officially licensed by the band. So make sure you go over to rockabilia.com and at checkout, put in the promo code PCTOTOT and save 15% off of your entire order. So check out MuncieMusic.com and check out rockabilia.com. Okay, on to today's episode. I get to sit down with my buddy Rick Thorne. He's a BMX legend. He's an actor. He's on Sirius Satellite Radio. He was a host on MTV, ESPN. The guy has done everything. He's in a band called Good Guys in Black. He's an amazing person. He's the most positive guy that I know. I got to know him on the 2009 Vans Warped Tour. He was on the tour. I was on the tour with the Ataris. And he's a great guy, and I finally got him on the show, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear this conversation. Before I jump to that, make sure you're following us on all of the social media platforms. It's at TOTOT Podcast. If you want to get in touch to become a sponsor, or if you just want to talk or whatever, TOTOTPodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to leave me some love or some hate. Tell me a tour story, whatever you want, on the TOTOT hotline. That is 1-765-372-8818. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review us in the iTunes store. Tell a friend about the show. Things have been going really well. We're growing exponentially every week. So make sure that you come back week in and week out. But here it is, my conversation with my good buddy, the biker in black, Mr. Rick Thorne. Hey, Rick, what's going on, man?
What's up, dude? How you been?
I've been great. I have not seen you since 2009 on the Warped Tour. How are things going?
You know what, dude? After high school, your life flies by, bro. 9 years is the blink of an eye. It seems like the other day.
Oh, yeah, totally, man. I know you're in contact with my buddy Jake Dwiggins, the drummer from the Ataris. I know that you guys have kind of kept in contact a little bit. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. He just hit me up not too long ago.
Yeah, I told him I was going to have you on the podcast. He got really, really excited. So at least you got to have one person that's super stoked.
Well, we'll get one like out there. You know, that's a start. That's a start, brother.
So tell me what you're up to today, man. What are you doing out there in California?
Well, like, you know, I don't know where to start here. Let me see. I don't compete anymore, but that's not a bad thing, because I think like with riding, you know, those that don't know, I ride BMX and competed 25 years and blah, 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 but I never stopped riding. And so I took my riding into different areas of, like, you know, I just created this show called Pool Seekers, And that's where we go on tour. It's a BMX and skate show. Boost Mobile sponsored it. And we go and we hit pools up. We drain them and we ride them and stuff. And it's like, it's almost kind of like you have chapters in your life, but you also have chapters in your career. Like when you decide to go a different way and then you work something out that way and then you go back to this way. And then, you know what I mean?
Is it a little bit more kind of DIY like it was at the beginning for you now? I know a lot of bands kind of revert back to that because it's a little bit easier. Is that how it is for you?
I mean, to a degree, it isn't the same like coming up with riding, you know, like riding something I'll never. The thing that people have a misconception about bike riding is that if you don't compete anymore, therefore you don't ride. But I always question that because I'm like, wait a second. Like, is every, like, I'll use the word action sports, even though that's kind of corny, but just so those that don't know can categorize this, is like, is every action sport or extreme sport like that? Like, oh, so if you don't compete, you're just done? Is that the only reason you rode was for a contest?
I mean, I would think that you would be with bikes the way that I was when I started out. I mean, I know you're a musician as well, but like, I'm going to do music whether I'm making money or not. I would think that the bike riding would be the same. It's something that you're passionate about, correct?
Yeah. No, that's the exact reason why I started riding. Like, I didn't start riding because I saw it on TV and I was like, oh, well, I'm going to be a sponsored pro. Of course, those were goals that came after the fact. But when I started, there was no sponsorships at all. We're talking like 1981, 82. And the reality is that I started riding for a feeling that it gave me, not so much for like fame or money or opportunity. It was just like, fuck, I finally feel alive, bro. And that's why I still ride. Like, we rode yesterday, man, we hit this pool. And we were like, it was sick, bro. And then, like, my homies were doing the stairs. You know, we call it the cake. And I was like, man, I'm going to do this cake. But I was a little scared, you know, because I hadn't done one in a minute. But I was like, God, don't doubt yourself. And then I overcame that fear and ended up pulling it and jamming the session. And it's those moments that I live for to challenge yourself. Because, like, that's what it's all about. Like, yeah, of course I got to make a living. I have children and I need to eat, of course.
Yeah.
But for me, like, I never stopped riding, and that led into TV, that led into film, that led into radio, that led into music with my band Good Guys in Black. It led into writing my own show, and taking all your resources and your experience that you have into a direction that's still associated, and you still get the same feeling, but it's to keep yourself entertained. Like, bro, if all I did was compete for 40 years of my life, and that's all I did, and I was content with that, cool. But to me, I just feel like I have more to offer than just that. You know what I mean?
Definitely. I actually wanted to get into that as far as, I mean, I'm going to get to the music as well, because this is sort of a music podcast, but I'm very interested. I know you grew up in Kansas City, correct?
Yeah.
So how did you get into BMX? Like, what was it about BMX that kind of got you excited? And how did you end up moving from Kansas City out to California? Can you kind of give me a synopsis of all that?
Well, I just grew up, bro. I grew up like totally. I don't know where it ever came from with riding. I think that, you know, first and foremost, I like to say the past is the past and you forgive and move on for what I'm getting ready to say. Is that I grew up in a family that was different at the time. And I grew up with a single mom that worked in a factory and dad left us and felt very abandoned and very alone. And then I just go out and ride my bike and it just made me, I can't say the moment when. But that I was like, this is the raddest feeling because I just feel free. I feel free from all this shit. I feel free from, I just feel like I have an identity, but I didn't even know that. I just liked the feeling it gave me. And we would jump curbs and shit like that and, like, you know, make up little jumps and stuff. And then I picked up a magazine, like a 7-Eleven or something, I don't know. And, like, it was a BMX magazine. And then that was, like, all right, on after that. Like, I was like, wow, they have all these ramps. And, like, I dreamed of California, right? So to answer your question, people always used to say, are you from California? Are you from California? When I lived in Missouri, because I dressed total California. I was obsessed with, like, getting out of the hot summers and getting out of the cold winters. And I wanted to just ride. At this point, it was just like ride. You know, and so for me, like, I didn't move to California until I was 27, a lot later than most people. But, you know, it happened that way. And once I moved out, I started doing a lot of TV stuff and things fell into place from there. But it was really just because I finally got the balls enough to say, all right, you know what? Like, I was married the first time I moved to St. Louis. I got divorced. I'm like, I'm not going to stay in Missouri. I'm not going back to Kansas either. You're going to do it now or you're not going to do it. But see, I'd been touring since I was 15. So I'd been to California And I hadn't gone out of the States until I was like in my mid-20s, but I kind of got a taste of it. And I was like, holy shit, you know, that's where I want to go. You know what I mean? So I just packed up what was in my car and drove out. That was it.
Were you, what were you listening to? I mean, I will tie music into this. I mean, for when you were younger, do you remember like the first time that music really spoke to you?
In the beginning.
Yeah.
Even before bike riding.
Yeah. Before that. Yeah.
Well, because I wanted to be in a band growing up, but I wasn't from a family of musicians or actors or entertainers or athletes of any sort at all. And, you know, I didn't, for me, with riding, it was just like, it was my deal. I could go do it by myself. I could leave whenever I want. I could come and go. I could do whatever. And so for me, music was always a huge part of my life. When the early days of bike riding, it was like, you know, here's a funny story. I was asleep on my mom's couch, and I'd sleep on the couch, and I used to watch this USA Night Flight shit all night thing. And Another State of Mind, I woke up in the middle of the night, and the movie Another State of Mind was on, the Fuse Brigade and Social D.
Love that movie.
And I was blown away, and I was like, and I knew right then what I wanted to be, what I wanted to do, like right that split second. And around that time, you know, I got this cassette tape from my friend Dennis McCoy, because we were listening to Run DMC and stuff, you know, and like the Ramones and stuff, and the Clash a little bit like that, you know. And then when I got this tape, it had like 7 Seconds, The Faction, Youth Brigade, The Adolescents. I was like, whoa. And that was right at Social D. Like, that was right after I saw Another State of Mind. And then I was like, oh, dude, okay. No, this is, I'm so like drawn in. And so for me, music was always the backbone, bro, because like I go out riding, put on my headphones, and I could jam out like and ride. And sometimes people could ride, sometimes people can't, right? But music is always and still is the motivator. Like, you're waiting for that part in that song to like bust out. But I grew up in like a family that was like, and if I'm talking a lot, just cut me off, bro.
No, dude, you're fine, man. I love hearing it.
Okay, so I grew up in a family where there's a lot of like verbal abuse, a lot of negativity, a lot of substance abuse, and I didn't want to be like any of them. Straight up, not that I was better. I just didn't. Not so much speaking of my mother, because I'm a lot like my mother, and I'm happy she raised me. It was more like, you know, my grandparents and that whole side of the family, and my aunt and uncles and all this. And I didn't want to live like that, man. And so I was straight edge. So I was drawn more towards like minor Ian McKay, like all day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Minor Threat all day. And I was a punker that was like wanted a better way of life than throwing the towel. Can I cuss on your show?
Yeah, you can say anything you want, man. It's internet based. Whatever you want to say.
Okay, cool. I'm just making sure. But like, yeah, I was like, it's kind of funny to ask, you know.
And I think it's very polite of you. Thank you very much. But yeah, you can say fuck. You can say whatever you want.
Well, I've done enough. You know, I've done interviews where I can't use any of that because you cuss the whole time. I'm like, oh shit, sorry. But I was like, fuck it. You know, like, I'm not the punker that's like, oh, fuck the world, I can fuck everybody, I want to fucking cause violence on everybody. But I was more like this from the way my mom raised me. Like, don't start no shit, don't take no shit.
Yeah.
And I was like from a punk mentality of like, I want a better way than what I've seen and what I've seen. How far am I going to get here being that way? And it was a really young age that like, you know, my mom, unfortunately, a couple of my uncles have passed away in car accidents when we were younger. My mom used to, you know, go to the graveyard and stay the night upset. And
wow.
It freaked me the fuck out at first. But then around 9 or so, and then after that, I was like, I'd stop and just chill and be like, well, if this is where I'm ending up, I'm going for it. But it was always in a positive way, in a way to where like, you know, I went through my anger phase and made some mistakes and realized that that wasn't the way that I wanted to go in life, you know? And so to me, I clung more towards that, like, not so much just being straight edge and preaching straight edge, just that like positivity, punk rock. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like the PMA, like the Bad Brains, and like you said, like, you know, Minor Threat, bands like that, that they were kind of maybe a little bit more activist, like as far as just spreading positivity and not just offending and just being a punk rock asshole, right?
Right, exactly. And then also too, then I got into the New York hardcore scene. but like Warzone, sick of it all. And the bonding, loyalship, a friendship, and the things that we were going through with riding, you know, we had the BMX brigade in Kansas City. So we were kind of like the same, you know, cut from the same cloth per se. Like we were all about brotherhood and sticking by our friends through thick and thin. And that mentality was really like, you know, we were from families that didn't have much money, you know, like we couldn't afford to be punk. I always joke about that because I've met some punkers that are really popular that I thought grew up punk, but really they were from really nice families. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It takes a lot of money to be a nonconformist if you're going to spike your hair and do all the clothes and stuff.
Right. Like you could afford to be punk. For us, like we were just like, we're either going to be punkers negatively or punkers in a positive way, but we were still looked at negatively because we were punk. And so the reality is that, no, to answer your question, and you know, is that music is always and still is such a huge part of, like, I think for anybody that rides and skates and moto and surf and stuff, I think the music is a huge, huge part of like our expression and our motivation. I mean, I can't say everybody, but I would think that a really huge majority of people that are into extreme sports and ride and stuff, music plays a huge part.
I always felt that there was this really cool kinship between like the extreme athletes and the musicians because, you know, things like Warped Tour, which I know you've been a part of. And it's just that whole kind of parallel between punk rock, hardcore, and indie music, and then the extreme kind of, you know, the athletes that are on the outer fringe of what people consider sports, because some people are, you know, football, basketball, but no, man, skaters, bikers, you guys are total athletes, man. And I love the fact that there is such a parallel drawn between kind of my world and your world. And of course you're in music as well. When did you start actually playing in bands?
I started my band Good Guys in Black in 2007. It was actually like Christmas Eve of 2007, I remember, because of Lynn put his headphones in. Because I like got a lot of, I got a lot of negativity from my sport, because I reached a point where I was on MTV Cribs, touring with Tony Hawk and video games. And, you know, I never really looked at it like, hey, here I am, like, bragging. Like, I always looked at it like, if I could come from a fucking lower middle class family in Missouri and get this far, your fucking ass can get it too. And I looked at it like that rather than, but a lot of people, they were jealous. And a lot of my industry at the time attacked me. So I was pissed off and I needed a voice. I was like, you know what? Good Guys in Black, you look at me a certain way, but I don't dick anybody over again. I work for my shit, right? So you're going to judge me because I took an opportunity because I have a talent, but I let it bother me so much that I was like, all right, I'm going to start a band. And that was the start of Good Guys in Black.
So you guys started in 2007. Did you like right away put out like a record, or were you guys doing more like just videos and singles?
Well, I didn't understand how musicians think, for one.
Okay.
Not at all. Like, me and you are hanging out, bro, and we're like, yo, let's be pro BMXers. I'd be like, let's get it. And we're hanging out, we'd be like, let's be in a band. I thought they were like, let's get it. It's like, no. No, I was a pro athlete, already established, starting the band. A lot of people were coming and going like they thought I was going to sweep them off their feet, put them on this world tour. I'm like, dude, I ain't getting paid to play music. Like, I'm getting paid to ride bikes. This is just, you know, and so dudes didn't really want to stick with it. So I went through a lot of musicians, got frustrated, a lot of musicians. And then I had to grow and realize how people are in the industry. And so then I went solo. I said, I'll pick the same music and I'll call it Rick Thorne. Yeah. Then I'm like, nah, I didn't want to do that. That wasn't my mission. So I did that for 3 years. And then I went back, finally got the sound I wanted for Good Guys in Black up until like last year. And said, okay, I'm going to do Good Guys in Black because this is what I put so much time and energy into, and I can't let anybody, you know, get my way of that. And hopefully I could find players that are down, which I've got. So it's cool.
So there at the beginning where like you were getting guys to play with you, were you like paying them to be like, to go record? Like, how was that all going down? That was all coming out of your pocket, right?
No. Yeah. Well, yeah, to a degree. I mean, when I first started, like I said, I didn't understand it as much as I do now. Now it's like, it's more now because I'm like, you know what? I'll pay for rehearsals. I'll pay for recordings. I'll pay for the music videos. I'll pay for all the merch. All right, blah, 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 blah. That's cool. But the reality is everybody in this town is in different bands, right? And the deal is that I get to, keep, you know, I'm just a visionary, you know. It takes one to be a visionary, and coming into it being a pro athlete kind of discouraged me at first, but then I'm like, no, it's cool. Like, you know, it all worked out, you know. In the beginning, I got to play a lot based off of the fact that, like, oh, you know, bike riders got a band. Not a lot of guys that were my level in X Games started a band. I don't think anybody did. You know what I mean? A punk band. I got to open for Pennywise and Guttermouth and Strung Out and Addicts and Suicidals. It was great, man. But the whole time, I just thought the dudes that I was in a band with were like, really like, dude, this is sick. But really, it was just kind of like, you know, it's just how musicians think that want to be hired, bro. That's all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. So how did you go about writing songs? Did you just kind of hum stuff to the guys? I mean, do you play guitar?
I play a little bit of rhythm guitar, but I would come in with hooks. I would come in basically writing songs with hooks, like vocals. And then I'd sit down with the guitarist, and then we would break down, like, we would get the melody. We would get our hook, you know what I mean? And then things would go from there. And that's still kind of how I write. I come in with a grip of songs and my guitars and go, I have an idea for this song, and we'll just start with the riff. So he's writing the riffs, but the attitude and the direction of the music is more from me. You
okay.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, yeah. So I don't play guitar that well, but I have an ear for things that I want the band to sound like, you know what I mean? And so I just sit down with the guitarist and we write the melody, and then we go and we get the drums, and then we get the bass, and we bang it out. You know what I mean?
So what are your thoughts on the Warped Tour? I know that you've done it a few times with Good Guys in Black, as well as being on the tour as an athlete. The Warped Tour just ended. They just had their last day ever the other day. I was pretty sad. What are your thoughts on Warped ending?
I mean, Warped ending, yeah, I was actually kind of shocked when I first got that news before the tour. I was like, whoa, they're actually, you know, it's going to end. And I was like, whoa, what a trip. I mean, yeah, I think it sucks personally, because I love the tour, but for some reason, the reasons be, it is what it is, you know, but I think that, like, that was a great tour for a lot of bands to get a name and recognition for themselves, you know?
Definitely.
And now it's just like festival after festival after festival, festival. I'm like over here going, how the hell do you get on any of these festivals to play any of these stages?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'm thinking, like, do I have to just load up the van and go hit some DIY spots? I'll do that shit. Let's go. You know what I mean?
How was it being on Warped Tour those early years as an athlete?
Dude, it was sick. Like I met Kevin Lyman in 1996. Me and Tony Hawk were at the Big Day Out Tour in Australia, riding for Airwalk. And I met Kevin Lyman. And I said, dude, I love Warped Tour. I love to do any of the tour. And he said, you could come out this summer for a couple weeks. And then I was like, all right. And at the time, to me, it was like the raddest thing that ever happened to me in my life. I'm like, here I am getting to play or getting to ride with all these rad bands and getting to bust out. Like, that was always what we talked about. You know what I mean? Like, in conversation, like, wouldn't it be rad if we had a stage next to Minor Threat, blah, blah. Even though Minor Threat didn't do Warped Tour, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And which would have been sick, but
would have been awesome. Yeah.
But at the time it was like the raddest thing. And so to be part of it, I always connected with the musicians, because in the back of my mind, that's what I wanted to do before I rode bikes. You know what I mean? And so for me, like, the early days, it was a lot different, but like us athletes, you know, we had our own bus. It was only the athletes. We were all professional, and we had to get up and ride every day. You couldn't get wasted and try to ride and perform. You get hurt, and you're jacked all tour, and, you know, you wanted to do the whole damn thing, you know? So the early days were rad, because I saw, like, a lot of bands go through there that just became phenomenal, like, huge, huge successes, too, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, that was the go-to tour where the next, I mean, Eminem did the Warped Tour. I remember that year.
I remember that too. Yeah. I remember seeing him on tour.
Yeah. And like, people were throwing shit at him on stage and stuff. And like, he's just like, it was just crazy, you know, like Black Eyed Peas and like You know, there's so many different big bands that just became huge. So I'm just kind of curious to see what's next. Is it like just festivals only and there's no tour that actually, I still think people care enough about music to go watch live bands play. You know?
I feel like Kevin's probably, I mean, I don't have any insider information, but I would be willing to bet that they're going to do something sort of like a Lollapalooza where they do like a 3-day festival, like a Riot Fest kind of thing with Warped, because I can't see it completely ending. I mean, maybe not across the country, but I think they're going to do something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I heard too, because they have to compete with so many other festivals. But, you know, I mean, maybe that's the way for them to do it. I don't think that it's actually going to. It's such a brand that makes, you know, brings the crowds, and they know the name and that you know what to expect from that kind of tour. That I don't see that brand that's been built over 24 years is going to go away now.
No, I don't think so either. Okay, well, I want to pivot into something else. I've been a father now. I had my son 2.5 years ago, and I also have a 9-month-old daughter. And one thing that I really, really, it really touched me, man, is that documentary, The Other F Word, that you were in.
Yeah.
Can you, how is it being a dad? Did it completely change your life? I know a lot of my listeners are like around my age or younger, and I know that, you know, they're starting to have kids or they've had kids. And I bring this up a lot on the podcast. You know, punk rock guys, when they become fathers, it's kind of life changing a little bit more than maybe your normal person.
Yeah, man. I think like I had my daughter when I was 36. I had my son when I was 38. I know for a fact that it changed my life to work harder. But in my case, like, here's the deal. I'll break it down for you. I've been single for about 7 years. I'll get deep with you right now. I've been married 3 times.
Okay.
Kind of the same thing happened all 3 times. I came to realize after all this, it's not really them. Like, why am I attracted to these girls? So then I'm like, I need to work on myself. Like, I need to really look at myself and work on myself, because running out and getting in another relationship ain't gonna fix any of my problems right now. So the last about 6-7 years, I've been single. I've only dated about 3 months out of all those years.
Wow.
I have no family out here. And in the beginning, I had my kids about 75% of the time. So people are like, how do you do it? I said, well, this is how I do it. I didn't grow up with a dad, and I ain't about to leave my kids. I'm going to pin it. Did it change my life? Yeah, it makes you work harder. But for me, I wasn't never really, like, I partied a little bit in my life. You know, I think a lot of people think that I was just a big partier guy. I've never done drugs. I don't drink much. So for that aspect, it wasn't really a big deal to me. I was just like, whatever. It was just more like, hey, all of us going out riding, can you go? I can't. You know what I mean?
Well, I feel the same way, because I mean, every couple months I get an offer from friends from different bands or whatever. Hey, go to Europe. Hey, go to Asia. And I'm like, man, I just can't. I'd love to go and play guitar and kind of have that life again, but I would miss my wife and I'd miss my kids. I want to be there for every moment of my kid's life. So I totally understand, man.
Yeah, yeah, no, you do. My kids are 9 and 11, and before you know it, they're going to be driving cars and shit, and they're going to be doing their own thing. And the reality is that, you know, I just wanted to give them all of my time and devote my life to raising them to be champs, like, that's something that I never had in California with the dad and all these kind of things. And if I meet a girl, I do. But yeah, I've had several friends that have been in bands and they have kids and they're like kind of worried. And then once that kid pops out, it definitely changes your life. If it doesn't change your life, you're just like some cold hearted dude. You know what I mean? You're like, wait a second. But it's challenging, but at the same time, it's like, well, what the hell? It's your blood, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Take care of them, you know?
Definitely.
And so, but my kids are cool. Like, they're surfing right now. I'm watching them right now. I push them. They're very active. They're very into sports. They're very, you know, you do what you can do. But, yeah, it changes your life, but it doesn't have to change for the worse, you know? Only thing I can do is stay out there. Anybody out there listening, doing it on your own is a challenge, straight up. Oh, yeah. But
I saw some videos. You and your son just got back from New York City. I think I saw some videos and some pictures of you guys out riding. How was that?
It was cool because my daughter went to Florida with her mom, and then I said, "Where do you want to go?" He's like, "New York." And he's been talking about it for 5 years. So I was like, "Well, that's my old stomping grounds. I know, let's go." I used to go to New York all the time, and it was rad because it was like something that we got even closer, riding around late at night, eating pizza and stuff. It was just, it's just cool. It's just the things that, it's kind of like one of those things where you want to give your kids the things that you never had. You know what I mean? And not to be like, not to cry about it, just to be like, do it. And I'm like, it's rad that we got to go do that. And he was stoked. I was stoked. That was cool.
That's awesome, man.
You know?
Okay, well, we'll move on to some other thing. I have some notes here, and I just want to make sure I get through my notes. So
hopefully I'm doing all right. Are we doing all right so far?
Yeah, you're doing great, man. I'm loving it. I just wanted to get through some of these things. I also have a listener question that I'll get to here in a second. But how was the whole like situation with you being on the Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 and the American Wasteland Games? Was that a pretty good experience?
Yeah, I mean, like, we were doing shows. Like, I started doing shows with Tony Hawk, like, back in, like, maybe 92 or something, me and Matt Hoffman. Because I used to ride for Hoffman Bikes for Matt Hoffman. And then that's when like, the BMX and skate shows, they kind of existed, but we started to do more of them. And I met Tony, and we all just became friends. And as that opportunity came about, it was like I was in Matt Hoffman Pro BMX 1 and 2, where the same people did Tony's games. And it was just like, I mean, I was honored, you know what I mean? To like be in the games. I was like, it was a trip. Like, cause on the real though, bro, to be real, I never really thought about it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, it's kind of like one of those things, like I don't walk around going, yeah, I was in that. I sometimes forget, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh yeah. Oh,
I understand that. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I try to stay humble, but to be in those games is an honor because, a lot of skaters that I know that are pro, they used to ride BMX, and a lot of BMXers used to skate, and I felt like it was a nice way or a pretty cool way to bridge the gap and the little petty feuds the sports might have to kind of say, it's all right, we all ride the same shit, it's not a big deal, you know what I mean? And I kind of looked at it more like that, and it was an honor because I love Tony Hawk, you know what I mean? He's a great dude. It's fucking awesome.
Did you have to do like the motion capture balls and like wear the little like skin tight thing when they, or did they just do like an artist rendering of your face and everything?
No, at the time for that, they would do stuff more off of video.
Okay.
So the technology had gotten to the point where they can get your motions off of video grab rather than doing all the little balls and stuff like Tony did and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was kind of like one of those things where it was a complete honor, you know, like it still is. I think I showed my kids that game a couple years ago and they were like, wow, you're in a video game. We're like, oh, cool. All right. Well, let's go do that. You know, they're like, they don't care. They're like, whatever. Like, whatever, Dad.
That's awesome, man.
Well, one thing about my kids that I didn't do at all was I never told them anything like that I did in a way that was bragging to them. I let them just figure it out on their own because I just felt like it's a way for them to just be, to keep them humble as well and learn from, just being humble is a great thing, but also proud of what you do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely, man.
But I never told them anything that I did. It's kind of funny. And then when they saw that, they were like, oh, you never told us. I was like, oh, I kind of forgot. Not in a mean way. You just keep moving forward. You go, oh yeah, fuck, that was cool.
Have they seen any of the movies that you were in, like Paul Blart Mall Cop or anything?
Well, she came home from school one day, a couple of years ago, about 3 years or so ago. Because, Dad, everyone keeps saying you're in a movie at school. Is that true? And I was like, yeah, I've been in a few. She goes, which one? And I told her, she goes, you never told us. I was like, I don't know. It never came up.
That's awesome, man.
I don't know. So like, yeah, kids, look what I done. I'm badass. I'm dead.
Yeah, it's like when your kids start understanding and you can have a conversation, it's like, okay, well, here's daddy's list of achievements.
yeah, totally. And so that's why I'm pushing them to be their own individuals. You know, people always say all the time, like, there's, yeah, K-Dog, He's up, baby. He's up. Oh, snow, my, look at you. Oh, sorry.
Dude, that's awesome, man. How did he do? Did he ride the wave pretty well?
Super far.
That's
awesome. I'm his manager, everybody.
That's awesome. That's what my dad always used to say, that he was going to drive the tour bus when I was little and I was learning how to play the guitar.
Oh, that's so sick.
But
the accomplishments and shit, bro, it's just kind of like, I'm just teaching them. They see, they learn, they know. I kind of push my kids. Right now I'm pushing them to say, like, start thinking what you want to do with your life, you know? Like, I'm only 11. I go, exactly. You don't want to wait till you're 18.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just to start figuring out what you like to do. And they're like, and then we'll focus on that and see where it goes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I have a listener question that I want to give you. This kind of surprised me as well. And then I did some searching and I found out this was true. Joe from Florida wants to know what it was like performing at the closing ceremonies of the 1996 Olympics.
Oh, dude, that was rad. It was so rad. Okay. There were 8 bikers, 8 skaters, and 8 inline skaters. And we all had to go do this choreographed routine in Atlanta. And it was insane, bro, because I don't know how many people were in there. I was 80,000 or something. And a commercial break, they wheeled out all these ramps, the full half pipe, these other, like, ramps that formed hips, these little box jumps. It was crazy. And it was kind of one of those things where we did it, and, like, a lot of, like, think this stuff ever be in the Olympics, and we were like, nah, oh, I don't know. And now it is, you know? And so at the time, it was, like, one of the biggest things that I'd ever done, but I was with all my friends. It just felt like a big party, bro. Like, there's me, Dave Mara, Matt Hoffman, Dennis McCoy, John Parker. It was pretty sick. Like, oh wait, no, Kevin wasn't there. Or was he? Did I hit my head too many times? Either way, it was a rad party. And so it was kind of like how it came up was just like, I got that through Matt Hoffman. You know, I got to give Matt a lot of respect, a lot of props that he did a lot for me when I rode for him, and he really believed in my riding and helped me out with a lot of opportunities. And I got that opportunity through Matt. You know, he asked me if I'd do that, and I was just like, but it's kind of like one of those things where you're doing it, but you're so focused on pulling all your tricks. You're not like, oh my God, I'm out there, Olympics, oh my God. You know, you're just more like, you're so in the zone of getting your runs done that you don't really feel the excitement as much until it's done.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you're like, oh, yeah. All along, it's just like you're with, you know, Tony Hawk was there, Steve Caballero was there. There's all your friends. Danny McDonald was there. And so it was, to answer your question, it was rad, man. And it was like pretty stoked to say I was part of helping break that into the Olympics. And hopefully the Olympics they keep some integrity of our sport in there.
This is called That One Time on Tour, so I'm not going to let you go without maybe giving me a story or two from the road, whether it be, you know, riding or in the band. Can you give me some cool stories or anything that you can think of?
Yeah, here's a good one for you. That one time on tour, me, Matt Hoffman, Dave Mara, we all loaded up from Oklahoma to drive to Santa Cruz or Santa Barbara or San Jose? It might have been San Jose. And we cruised to go to this contest, the BS contest that Matt Hoffman was throwing. This is before X Games, say 1992. All right? So it's like a tour. You know, we toured up there. We're doing our thing. And so we go to the contest, and I roll in to ride the ramp, and my chain breaks, and I slam into the other side of the wall. And I racked myself real bad. So I went to the bathroom, and I was pissing blood. And I was in denial because I didn't have health insurance, couldn't afford it. So I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to go back to the hotel, lay down for a little bit. So I passed out. I woke up about 2 a.m. next to Matt Hoffman. The whole bed's full of blood.
Wow.
I'm like, dude, I got to go to the hospital. So I go to the hospital, I go to the urologist. They had to call in late at night, stick this little scope down my dick, you know, see what's going on, realizes there's a tear.
Ooh.
I had to go get a catheter right there. Got back in the van the next day with my shorts on, blood everywhere. Had to drive all the way back to Oklahoma from San Jose to get another car to drive from Oklahoma to Kansas City with a catheter.
That's home. Insane.
Got home and the Beastie Boys were playing, so I was like, I'm going. that night went there with the blood still all over my hospital pants and the catheter and rocks and the Beastie Boys. My whole life has been a tour, bro. Home or on the road. You know what I'm saying?
Wait, that kind of brings up some stuff then. Can you tell me some of like your most gnarliest like injuries that you've had over the years?
I got another tour story for you. One time on, this is a good one too, that you did be musically. One time on Warped Tour, every day Jim would have me, from Pennywise, would have me ask me to sing a Minor Threat song. So I'd sing Minor Threat. And I'd go up and he'd hand me the mic and I got to sing Minor Threat with Fletcher and Byron and everybody. And that was probably like one of my best moments on Warped Tour because I was like, holy cow, I really actually feel like I'm in a band right now.
Yeah.
You know, something I always wanted to do. Oh my goodness, you know? That was a good one. It was fun. But injuries?
Yeah. I want to hear some gnarly injuries, man. I'm sure you've had some.
Injuries, yeah, man. Injury-wise, the worst one that I had is I hit the corner of a loading dock in my face.
Wow.
And what happened was is I came up short on the gap, and when I hit, I broke my pallet.
You broke your pallet?
Yeah, and I didn't really know what the fuck was going on. I had a little leaking from my brain and shit. I was like, what the hell is this shit? So I broke my pallet. I'll start over. I hit a corner of a loading dock. I broke my pallet. All this fluid. So I have my teeth are fake. So I popped out my teeth. I was like, shit. I tried this silly, stupid gap, bro, in St. Louis, and I hit a corner of a loading dock.
Wow.
So I basically hit, like, head first and then landed on my feet. And, like, hit my head on a loading dock, and then it bounced me back to stand on my feet. I was like, what the fuck just happened? And so I had all this fluid leaking, like, in my mouth. I didn't taste like death, actually. I was like, what is this? So I went to the doctor. Turns out I broke my palate. So what they had to do was they cut my head from ear to ear, pulled my skin down, took some fat from my stomach to stop the leak because my brain was leaking because I hit my head so hard.
Oh, my God. What's the healing process like for that?
Check it out. I'll tell you in a second. I deviated my septum. I had a hairline crack along my eye socket. My left corner of my eye broke, so they had to do a plate and screws. Then they had to lift my face and put plates and screws to align my palate back in place. But in order to do all of that, I need to have a tracheotomy. So I have a hole in my throat.
Jeez.
So I woke up with like a tracheotomy, one stitch across my head. My head was swelled up so big. And I lost all sense of taste and smell. And I had double vision. And they said, well, hopefully the double vision will go away and hopefully you get your taste and smell back. Dude, I was eating. Everything was like glue. Glue. But I couldn't eat. This is before. Actually, I went home like 2 days before surgery, and I lost all sense of taste and smell. But after surgery, my mouth was wired shut because it had to wait for the palate to reattach itself because they had put screws there. So my mouth's wired shut, fucking all this shit. And I'm like, fuck, dude, X Games is 2 months away. Fuck me. I'm going to go, man. I've worked to get that shit. I'm going. And I'd sit up at night and visualize like my run,
yeah,
the music I'd ride to, what the ramp was, what the crowd would be like, what I would be wearing, what tricks I would do. And sure enough, 2 months later, I competed X Games and my head was still swelled up. I'm going for it. But like, the power of healing is in the mind. Okay, check it out, brother. I take no pain medicine. I don't take anything. I hardly ever get sick. Very rarely. I never get a headache. Ever.
That's crazy.
The way you heal is the power of your mind. Your mind heals you quicker. Not the drugs and shit, not your prescription drugs, not with none of this, that. It's your mind. It's like how quick you want to get back on the horse. But for my job, if I miss a day of work, I'm bumming out because I love to ride. So if I'm hurt for 2 months, I'm like, I can't be hurt for 2 months. Get out of your mind. I ain't been around for 2 months. That ain't going to happen. Because I love what I do. Most people might not love what they do, and they want the fucking 6 month break.
Yeah.
Because they don't like their job.
I love my job. I'm a guitar instructor now that I'm not on the road, and I love it. I get to hang out with young kids all day and teach them Metallica songs. It's a lot of fun.
That's sick, bro. That's really sick, actually.
So did I saw a picture on, I think on your Facebook, it was the back of your head was pretty tore up. Did that just happen recently?
Yeah, I was riding this bull, and my chain broke rolling in, and I slammed and hit my... Hold on. Hey, the ocean's big enough for both of you.
This is my favorite episode. This is my favorite episode of this podcast yet, man.
Oh, well, no, he's like, Dad, Nally's getting in my way. I look out and there's no one in the water. Hardly at all. And I'm like, the ocean's big enough for both of you. What's going on? No, but wait, what did you ask me just now?
I asked you about the...
My head.
Yeah, your head.
Yeah. No, we were riding this pool and my chain broke rolling in the shallow end and it flipped me over to the deep end. The way, you know, pools, they just, you know, gradually... sometimes go down not so gradual, and it was just my chain, man, and I smacked my head, and I was like, dude, I didn't get stitches or anything. I just let it heal up, and it was pretty gnarly, but, like, after that, I was like, you know what? I know it looks cool and all to ride without a helmet. I did it for years, but after I smacked my head again, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to start wearing a little bigger skate helmet, like, in the pools. And then when I ride vert, I ride a full-face helmet. I was like, you know what? I don't care what anybody thinks. And get over that whole fact of, like, what looks cool and what's not. I'm 48. I think I should probably protect my head better. And that one was that was actually kind of a wake-up call to say, hey, bro, like... Well, what actually really happened was 2 weeks after that or about a month after that, I fell again and busted my head open in another spot. And then I had this shit leaking out of my nose. This is real shit right here. I'm not even kidding you.
Wow.
And it was like yellow fucking, it looked like a yellow Skittle, you know what I mean? It was like fucking gross yellow. And I did some research and there were membranes. And I was like, bro, okay. All right, you know what? I hit my, busted my head open in two spots in the last month. I'm going to wear a helmet. Like I just think that it's, for my longevity, I keep riding and I love riding. I don't see why I shouldn't be wearing a helmet. You know what I mean?
Totally, man. We want you to stay safe. I want you to keep riding and keep doing music, man.
Yeah, well, you get... Thanks, brother. Well, you get caught up in that, like, you know, riding the helmet because it looks more natural.
Yeah.
You're out. Like, it's you against the pool. It's you against the world. You're so hardcore. I get it, bro. Sometimes I still might not wear a helmet, but it depends on what I'm doing. But if I want to be riding pools, I think it's smart, especially after that, because... You know, the last thing I want to do is have any kind of other surgery on my brain. And when you have membranes leaking out of your fucking nose, it's kind of a little bit of a wake-up call to say, yeah, I'll probably wear a helmet.
Definitely. Well, hey, man, we're approaching an hour, and that's normally where I like to cut these. I've got a couple more questions. Before I get into, like, Pool Seekers and your music stuff you've got going on right now, what are you listening to? Do you have any new bands you really like that you found out about, or what's on your playlist right now?
You know what's crazy? My playlist, I've been listening. I like the new Suicidals, the last one they put out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But a lot of the stuff that I listen to, man, is like newer bands. Not to sound like fruity or anything. I just kind of like there's a certain style of songs, bands that I just can't get over, like Metallica and Pantera. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm just like that's the kind of stuff I've been really into lately. But I've always been into. See, my musical range is huge though because. It goes so many different ways, like, of what I would like. If I like it, I like it. I don't care.
Yeah, you know definitely. What I mean? If it's good music, and it's good music. It doesn't matter what genre it is.
Totally. And so my thing is that, like, I my iPod, it always just seems to be music that, like, really gets me pumped up to want to, like, go next level and ride, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I just to come off the top of my head, I've really been listening to Pantera a lot lately. Enrage, always, Korn, you know, I really like... For me, riding, that's the stuff that makes me, like get into that zone of, like, all right, let's go. You know what I mean? But then I could put in, like, right now, I could put in Fugazi.
Hell yeah.
Like, to me, that's what's working for me. That's the era of music that I love. Not that I'm not open to the other stuff, because I am. But it just seems like, for me, I know what works for me, like, bands like Verbal Assault and Grey Matter, and you know these are older bands, DC bands. You know?
Yeah. A lot of those Discord bands, right?
Yeah, Marginal Man's another one, and you know those bands kill it. Another really good one is Beefeater. Oh my gosh, you know?
Awesome.
It's just you know so that's pretty much just in my stuff right now. A lot, like I said, a lot of Metallica and a lot of Pantera.
Well, I tell you
hold
what,
on.
I...
Hold on, 1 second, and then we're going to cut this. Can a sand shark be there? Yeah, just pick it up and take a bite its head off, bro. See, might have saw one. It ain't gonna hurt you.
You say it's a shark?
Hold on. It's a land. It ain't gonna hurt you. A little sand.
Oh, okay.
Just step on it. Swim off. Ain't gonna do nothing to you. What do you think? It's gonna come and bite you? It's got better things to do than bite you. It might not even like what you taste.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, but no, but music, but you know, I like to, you know, there's this one band a few years ago that I was listening to called Mongol Horde. Have you ever heard of this guy?
I've heard the name, yeah. I don't know much about him.
But, like, I like to be introduced to some newer music. You know, music goes through a lot of changes, you know. I just like that gritty, heavy riffs, like the Cro-Mags I've been listening to as well. Like, you know, it's just that aggressiveness, you know. I dig it, bro.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're going to go shred up a pool on your bike, you probably want to listen to something pretty aggressive, correct?
Yeah, and if you're doing L.A. traffic, dude, you got to put Kill 'Em All on.
Kill 'Em All. Yeah, heck yeah, dude. Vulgar display of power.
Bro, I get through L.A. traffic with that every day. Watch out.
Okay, well, I tell you what, man, it's been a blast having you on the podcast. Can you tell me a little bit about Pool Seekers? I know that's kind of the thing that you're doing, like, pretty hardcore right now.
Yeah, no, Pool Seekers is cool because it's a show I wrote. Basically, I wrote the show, produced it, directed it. All my band's music's in it. It was totally like a DIY project, and then Boost Mobile funded it. And it's 10 episodes. The first season's 5 episodes, and we're in California. The second season, we went on tour. It's called Drain 'Em All, and we went to different cities. I got Tony Hawk on episode, Steve Cavalera, Salva, pro bike riders like Ron Wilkerson's on an episode. And it's cool because basically, look, dude, I got divorced for the last time in my life ever. And at the time, you know, I'd worked myself up to Beverly Hills. And it was never really like a status thing. It happened. It happened that way. And I had to let go of all of that stuff. I had to let go of all my possessions, go back to a little apartment with 2 dogs, a cat, and 2 kids. Starting over, you could say. Band, trying to figure out the band, trying to figure out my writing career, like trying to figure out myself, like, what the fuck, man, what am I going to do, you know? And then I started to go ride pools, and I started to look at these abandoned houses, and I started to say, like, yo, like, all this shit we work for, you can't take with you, homie. You can't take it. You can't take it. You and everything you work for, your life set, this, that, whatever. Like, but at one point in your life, you got to let go. And so I'm sitting in these, like, multi-million-dollar houses in their yard going, completely abandoned, going, damn, this is a wake-up call to me to help me get over my situation of letting go of a house, letting go of possession. You feel me? And
yeah.
I got drawn to that, and then it just turned into, like, I started filming everywhere we go on a GoPro. And then randomly, I get a call from Boost to do a commercial because I wrote for them for like 10 years. And they're like, we want to get you back on the team. We want to do this commercial. And they started asking me about all my pool coverage. And I said, well, I might do a YouTube show, but I don't know. And they said, let's talk. Turns out they went ahead and sponsored the show and sponsored 2 seasons of it.
That's awesome.
So it kind of just organically happened from like getting a divorce, realizing letting go of possessions, you can get that back. Find yourself to be happy and content with what you're doing, and then you're going into these multi-million-dollar houses that are just shit. And the only thing you could think of, bro, is just like keep moving forward, man. Enjoy this ride, because not to say don't work for things and not to say don't enjoy things, but all of us in our life at some point have to let go of all of it.
Yeah,
straight up. And that was a hard thing for me to do, coming from Missouri, making it to Beverly Hills, and being able to pull it off. You know what I mean?
Were you living in Beverly Hills on your episode of MTV Cribs? Because I watched that this morning in preparation for our chat.
Oh, that's awesome. No, that was a house 1 street over in Bel Air.
Okay.
Which was cool, which I mean, just the way that it all happened is, you know, I had a manager at the time, and his friend was selling the house there, and I just got divorced a second time, and he said he should buy his house. I got a good deal on it, and I didn't even really know where I was moving. Then I grew up, oh, shit, I'm right here, and all this shit. Oh, it's crazy. But, I used to live right down the street from where Charlie Manson, all those murders happened with Sharon Tate. And all
wow,
that.
That's crazy.
And the house is completely gone, but just the whole, like, studying all that and studying those hills and all the drama it's had, you know, it's pretty intriguing. It's like, wow, this is fucked up shit, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I found myself like at a place, I think, where my subconscious mind always was at, was when I was that kid in Kansas City dreaming.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think when you grow up in the Midwest, I mean, and I'm not like, you know, saying bad things about anybody else where they grew up, but me too. Like I grew up in Indiana, which is fairly close to Kansas City. I think anytime anything happens to you, you are a bit more humble because I think, you know, Henry Rollins always says he comes from the minimum wage world. So every opportunity is kind of like a blessing. You know, I feel like that's how it is. If you come from the middle of the country, like you do, and like I do, you don't take things for granted the same way.
No, you don't. I mean, I don't think you do. I think that, like, there's a lot more poor people than rich. There are a lot more people that are middle class or lower middle class than rich, and especially in a lot of those areas, too. And so you have this different sense of, like, gratitude, I think.
Yeah.
But I really think it really is person to person, too, as well. I mean, for me, I just, you know, I thought I was doing things the right way and got a house first and had kids and, you know, doing this and that, and then. And then now I just come to realize that, like, you do the best you can do to enjoy the ride, you know, and sometimes when one door closes, don't get too upset because many more are open that are better. And that's how you got to look at life. You can't, you know, you can't say, oh, I'm losing, I lost my house, and say I had to let go of a house because I'll get another one. It's just a house.
Well, dude, I'll tell you what, you've been a breath of fresh air on this podcast. I love your positivity, man, and I think a lot of people are going to take a lot away from this podcast. So thank you so much for being a part of it, man.
Yeah, thanks, and hopefully I didn't talk too much.
No, you talked just enough, man, and I love the breaking away and talking to your kids. I'm leaving all that in because it's real life, and I love it, man.
Oh, hold on. Watch out for that shark. No, I'm kidding.
So what I'd like to ask you, though, can you tell me about Good Guys in Black and what you guys have? Anything coming up? I know you've been doing a lot of videos and whatnot.
Yeah, same thing. Doing videos and, like, just positioning myself with, like, writing new songs. Got four new songs. I got a new song coming out called Face Your Shadow. And that's a song about basically realizing, like, what you're facing yourself. You know, a lot of Good Guys in Black is from that demeanor, you know, that stance. As far as shows, nothing's planned right now, but that's going to change because, you know, juggling multiple careers, I got Pool Seekers filmed. I got that done. I couldn't tour doing that. That was a lot. That was a heavy project for me to do, you know, but along the way, we pushed to write new music for not only the show, but also with the, you know, hey, we want to play some gigs. We want to tour. You know what I mean? So now that I've gotten that pretty much like done, now I'm focusing on finishing this music video. We got a new video coming out called Wake Up, a new single coming out called Face Your Shadow. And as far as gigs, like, there'll be gigs. I'm optimistic on touring in that. It's just like now I'm directing my... When you have multiple careers and you have to juggle, you have to go from shift gears from one to the other to the other.
Yeah.
You're taking it all on at once. You feel what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely, man.
And yeah. So as far as that, it's just keep moving forward, keep writing songs, and keep expressing ourselves because that's really what it's all about, period. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. So how can my listeners find you on the internet? What do you want to plug right now as far as so they can find everything on YouTube? Do you have a website? Like, what's the deal?
Website's rickthorne.tv, and then I have goodguysinblack.com. But Instagram's all Rick Thorne and Good Guys in Black. And then Pool Seekers, Instagram, Pool Seekers, you know, same. You just Google Pool Seekers, you'll see it online. So that's probably the best way to see what's going on with me. I'm really on Instagram quite the most. But that seems like, you know, the best way to see what I'm up to on a daily basis. But yeah, check out the music, though, goodguysinblack.com, and you're on Spotify and iTunes and all that stuff, so it's cool.
Awesome, man. Well, Rick, I just want to say thank you very much, and hopefully, you know, when you guys have some more music come out and whatnot, maybe come back for a part two and we can talk all about the music. But I love this podcast. I love how freeform it was, and you're an awesome dude, man, and I miss you, and I hope you're doing great, and I'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, brother. And thanks a lot, man. Thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it. Okay, much love, brother. Stay right. Peace out.
Much love, man. Bye.
And there it was, my conversation with my good pal, the biker in black, Mr. Rick Thorne. Make sure you guys check out his band, Good Guys in Black. Check out his show on YouTube, Pool Seekers.
And go to rickthorne.tv for all of the other information that you would need on Rick. I want to give a shout out to my new art director, Will, over at Will Felick Art and Design. Will is a great guy, and he's been helping me out with a lot of the promo and the artwork for the social media posts and whatnot. So big ups to Will. And next week's episode, we're just going to keep rolling. We've got my good friend, Jonathan Newby. Jonathan sang for the band Brazil that was on Fearless Records, a band that I was in for a while. He's been in all kinds of really cool, you know, projects. And he recorded at my old recording studio, The Gallows, with Brian from the Ataris, one of my buddies, who hopefully is going to be a guest on the show soon. I'm just texting him as I was getting ready to record this outro. So, yeah, Jonathan Newby is going to be on the show next week. If you guys don't know about Brazil or you don't know anything about Jonathan, Google it and check it out. It's going to be an awesome episode. So I'm going to leave you guys with a song by Good Guys in Black. But before I do that, make sure that you are following us on all of the social media platforms. It's at TOTOT Podcast. Get in touch, TOTOTPodcast@gmail.com. Call the TOTOT hotline, 1-765-372-8818. So that's going to do it for me this week. I appreciate you guys coming back and listening. And if you have any suggestions, you know, let me know. If you want to be on the show, hit me up. Maybe I'll have you on the show. I'm getting ready to put out a link soon for our Patreon. I don't know how it's going to go. I mean, I know some podcasts do fairly well with Patreon. We're going to offer some exclusive stuff, and it's going to be super, super cheap. So if you guys are interested, you know, just let me know that it's going to be something cool. If not, if you guys, if it just feels like I'm like begging for money, then I'm not going to do it. It does, you know, cost a little bit of money to keep the lights on for this podcast. And I've got some great sponsors that are helping, but you know, I figured I'd try the Patreon thing because some of you guys get a hold of me a lot and you seem to really like the show. So, let me know if you think that's a good idea. And, I'm going to leave you with this really cool song by Rick's band, Good Guys in Black. Here it is. Face Your Shadow, Good Guys in Black. I'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much.
You got that! while you can. Rip it, shred it, hit it, get it, live it while you can. Face your shadow. Face your shadow. Face your shadow. Face your shadow.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA Podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.